And this is KPCW. Good morning. It's 8:06 on this Friday, June 5th. I am KPCW's Grace Dorfler, filling in for Roger Goldman on the local news hour this morning. It's currently 45 degrees with clear skies in Park City, high of 83 this afternoon. In the Heber Valley, 51 degrees and sunny with a high of 89. ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes has details about the weather forecast.
Happy Friday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Friday. We've got lots of sunshine heading our way, an absolutely stunningly beautiful day out there for us. But temperatures are sure going to warm up. We're talking highs climbing into the low 80s for us this afternoon in the Park City area. We're going to see those high temperatures climbing into the upper 80s in the Heber Valley. Again, lots of sunshine expected, a little bit of a breeze as well. That breeze will really pick up heading into your Saturday. In fact, we'll call it windy conditions with lots of sunshine, dry conditions in place, a few high clouds late in the day. But high temperatures are going to soar once again. We're talking highs in the mid-80s in Park City with high temperatures in the lower 90s in the Heber Valley. So a toasty Saturday with sunshine, a few clouds late, but those gusty winds building in as well out of the south and west. Now, a weak front will move by to our north Saturday night into Sunday. That'll keep a few clouds around, but no worse than partly sunny skies for your Sunday. We'll see those high temperatures climbing only into the low 70s, though, for your Sunday in Park City, with highs only in the upper 70s there for us in the Heber Valley. As we move into early next week, we'll see a brief warm-up once again with mostly sunny skies, highs in the upper 70s in Park City, low 80s expected for us in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards your Tuesday, we'll be in the mid-70s once again for highs in Park City, with highs around 80 degrees with partly cloudy skies, a slight chance of an isolated shower, a little better chance of scattered showers finally moving into the forecast by next Wednesday. Again, high temperatures around 70 in Park City with high temperatures in the upper 70s in the Heber Valley. That front will bring us a little more significant cool down heading into the end of next week, with highs only in the mid-60s for us in Park City, with high temperatures only around 70 in the Heber Valley. So if you're not a big fan of the heat, just wait till about the end of next week. We could have some much cooler weather building into the area. But between now and then, the heat, the wind, and very slim rain chances in the forecast. That's your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
In terms of what's coming up on this morning's show, we have a full hour of news ahead. First, we will hear from Midway City Council member Andy Garland. He has updates on Tuesday's council meeting, including Midway's budget for the new fiscal year. Then Park City Council member Molly Miller has a recap of last night's meeting. And from the Wasatch Parent Network, Amy Taylor and high school senior and recent graduate Kaya Alvey will talk about the Emergence Art Program and its recent contest, where Kaya was a winner. After that, stay tuned for the community campfire at 9 o'clock. Amber Borowski-Johnson goes behind the scenes of the Park Silly Sunday Market, which kicks off the 2026 summer season this Sunday. Andrea Buchanan revisits her story with retired chef and longtime Park City resident Julie Wilson, who helped shape the food and beverage programs in Deer Valley over the last 40 years. Coach Bill Skinner and new sports intern Matthew Traub get the jump on the summer sports season. And female singer-songwriter from Logan, Utah, Say More, ends the hour for this week's music sesh. That's Friday, today at 9 o'clock. And a look ahead at an event on Monday. Four Democrats are running to represent Districts 4 and 5 on the Summit County Council: Christy Babalis, John Kuchera, Candace Hart, and Meredith Reed. KPCW and the Park Record will host a forum where candidates will answer questions about Summit County's future development and leadership ahead of the primary election June 23rd. The audience will also have a chance to ask questions. Join us Monday, June 8th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Sheldon Richens Building Auditorium in Kimball Junction. It will also be streamed live at kpcw.org. A woman is in jail after allegedly holding up Oakley's grocery store at knife point and striking a runner as she fled the scene in a white limousine. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on the arrest.
A 37-year-old woman was arrested Tuesday following a mid-speed car chase with Summit County Sheriff's deputies as she fled the scene of an alleged robbery in Oakley. Summit County Sheriff spokesperson Skylar Talbot says deputies began looking for the woman around 9 p.m. after a report that she was in Oakley intending to bomb Chateau Health and Wellness. Talbot says the woman's boyfriend in Oklahoma City first reported the plans to his local police department. Talbot adds that the woman had been fired from the Chateau Mental Health Facility, which opened last year. En route to the center, deputies were diverted to Ken's Cash on Center Street, where an employee reported an attempted robbery.
Some of the information that employee provided as far as suspect, details, did match up to what we'd already learned about the possible suspect in connection with that bomb threat.
The woman allegedly held up Ken's Cash with a small knife, but could not open the cash register and drove away from the store in a white limousine. Authorities suspect the woman drove east to Franson Lane, where an 18-year-old woman told deputies she was struck in the legs by the limo while running. Jail records show the runner told deputies the driver threatened her and followed her home before turning around in the driveway. The runner's father briefly pursued the limo down Weber Canyon Road in his own car. He told deputies the limo backed into his vehicle and caused thousands of dollars in damage before fleeing. A deputy back at Ken's Cash said in arrest papers he saw the limo leaving the area around 9:45 and followed it north.
That led to a relatively slow speed pursuit down State Route 32. Deputies deployed spike strips. The vehicle did come to a stop there on SR 32. The individual exited the vehicle, fled pretty short distance on foot, and then surrendered to deputies.
Arrest records say the five-mile chase reached a top speed of about 52 miles per hour. It ended near Rockport State Park, and deputies reported finding a knife in the limo. The woman is being held on suspicion of aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison, and other offenses. She's not been charged as of Thursday afternoon. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, on the phone with me is Midway City Council member Andy Garland. Andy, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for being here. There's a lot going on in Midway, as always. I'd love to start with the budget, if that sounds good to you. There was a public hearing at your council meeting on Tuesday. There's no tax increase planned for next year. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. There is no tax increase, and we're fortunate to be able to present the level budget from our 26th fiscal year to our 27th fiscal year.
Very nice.
So we shouldn't see any increases.
Yeah. I know there have been some budget workshops through the spring. What kind of conversations are you and the other members of the council having about, you know, what are the biggest priorities for the town?
Well, our biggest priority is roads and services. With Mayor Simons being new, he's really doing a deep dive in the staffing of the city, where we need to allocate our resources. We have another road project going on Berkey Hill right now. Hopefully that'll be wrapped up. Working with UDOT on the Main Street project, which is taking a little longer than we thought, but that'll add a traffic light at the intersection of River Road and Main Street. So that'll be good for the city.
Yeah. And has the council recommended any big changes to the budget from the first draft to now?
There are no big changes.
All right.
Like I say, the budget's, it's actually similar dollar amount year over year. We've had a few changing in staffing. We've had a couple of people leave the city. So there's some budget there that we don't have to worry about where the merit increases are coming from this year. So we're in a good place.
Very nice. And my understanding is that part of that might be because Midway as a town is relatively built out. Like there's not, you know, there is new development happening, but not on the same scale as a place like Heber. Do I have that right?
That's true. And we have seen a nice rise in our sales tax revenue by some of the vendors that have chosen to come to Midway, which has helped with revenues to the city so we don't have to raise taxes.
Yeah, you can get revenue from those other streams.
Correct.
With that in mind, I do want to ask you a little bit more about small businesses in Midway. It seems like there's a good number popping up and it'll be a busy summer for tourism, I'm sure. And I know you've been on the Planning Commission in the past. Could you talk a little bit about how the city tries to balance the needs of business owners and tourists and still meet the needs of locals?
It definitely is a balance with the success of the new businesses in town. It's certainly created some traffic issues. As I said, the light at River Road, which has been planned for a while, will help with traffic. One of the other things that the council and the mayor are going to focus on is parking. Where do people park? Do we institute paid parking? Do we try to create some other parking lots in and around the city? So that's a focus right now as well. So trying to balance the quality of life of people that live here all the time versus the people that are just coming in to shop. And we appreciate those people.
Yeah, makes sense. I know zoning plays a role in that too. You know, things like the commercial zones or the nightly rentals, I know, are a hot topic right now. Go ahead.
We have been looking at the commercial zones, where they are, what should or should not be allowed in a commercial zone. And we're also relooking at the TROD. We're trying to get an understanding of people that are legally in the nightly rental or the TROD area, and those people that are outside that are choosing to rent their homes outside. So we're trying to get a handle on that. We want to be respectful of neighbors in the different neighborhoods. So we will probably see the TROD shrink over the next few months.
Oh, interesting. And that's the transient rental overlay district.
Correct.
Yeah. Just for any listeners who might not be familiar. What about
for
the
commercial? Yeah, we tend to use acronyms.
Yeah. Can't go wrong with a good acronym. What about the commercial zones? What could change there?
We could just square off some of the areas. There are some things that are not allowed in midways. You know, if you have a drive-through that currently exists, there are no more drive-throughs that are going to be allowed. There are no auto repair shops. That's not going to change. But it's just squaring off the boundaries in and along Main Street, going down toward South Hill. Mm-hmm. So you won't see drastic changes, but more like squaring off of the boundaries, because we do have some neighborhoods that there's a jog into an area that probably doesn't make sense. So we're going to try to clean that up.
Understood. Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. And then I one more question about tourism. You know, Midway's known for being this charming Swiss-themed town. And I'm curious how much you think the rise of social media culture and influencers has affected tourism in Midway.
I think it, from a sales tax perspective, it has certainly helped. You know, we have some successful businesses that are drawing people to town, and then those people are not just focusing on one specific establishment, but they're actually going around to the other establishments that we have in town. And as the saying goes, all boats lift when the tide rises, so everyone's seeming to benefit. Now, there is a cost to that, traffic, parking, but that's the downside to having successful businesses. But we appreciate the revenue and we appreciate people. And then, of course, we have city events that also draws people in.
Yeah, understood. And we'll get to some of those city events in a few minutes. In other downtown news, I wanted to chat briefly about capital projects. You mentioned there's some Main Street traffic happening with UDOT's construction. Also in the budget for next year is renovations for the community center in the town square. Could you share any updates on what's next for that project?
Yeah, so some of the buildings that we have, the city buildings, are tired. And so the old town hall, the floor needs to be replaced. We're looking at upgrading audio, visual, and Wi-Fi to make sure that our presentations are ADA compliant. That's a big thing. If you come to a city meeting, it's sometimes difficult to see what the presentation is. Mm. So we're looking at upgrades there. The stage, making sure that facility is ADA compliant. So just making some improvements and maybe even some deferred maintenance that hasn't happened. Those will be happening over the next few months. Those spaces are popular. They get used, and we just want to make sure they're in great condition.
Sounds good. At Tuesday's meeting, you chatted a little bit about the Lundin Open Space Agreement as a council. This conservation easement, it's, I believe, a little over 100 acres, about 115 or 120 acres, and it's been in the works for some time now. Why have there been some delays in getting it finalized?
There have just been, I think there is an agreement on 99% of on both sides. The last part is public access, a fence, what type of gate, so they can continue, the Lundins can continue to farm. And I believe we are there. We're looking to have a special meeting this coming week to just wrap that up. So hopefully that can get closed in the next week or two.
Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit more about that public access conversation? What kind of agreement did you come to?
So I have not been privy to the latest iteration, but there was a question the other night about what kind of gate, because they want to maintain cattle and horses on the property, but also have a public trail in the middle of it. And sometimes those don't always agree. So there's talk about an S gate or a crash gate and fencing on both sides with a trail up the middle, and just how logistically that will work and where it will line up on the property.
Okay. So you think this could really get squared away and finalized at the special meeting then?
That from our part, of course, there's multiple players in this agreement, not only Midway, Wasatch County, Utah Open Lands, but I believe we're all on the same page to get this closed. This is an important area of the city that we'd love to get, have the conservation easement put on and protect it in perpetuity.
Yeah, very close to the finish line now.
Yes.
Yeah, well, good to hear. You mentioned some upcoming events, that it's going to be a busy summer for the city. I know the summer concert series starts soon. Could you share a little bit about
concerts,
what that is?
Yep, on Wednesdays, Music on the Square will start this Wednesday, June 10th, and then we'll continue each Wednesday starting at 6:30. On June 13th, the City Beautification and Arbor Day, where we go around and clean up some of the city parks and gardens. Then on June 15th, as part of the 250 celebration, we are going to be lining Memorial Hill with flags, every 20 feet going up Memorial Hill. It's been really a great effort to see people contributing to that. They'll have a solar light on top, so at night you should be able to see that wrap around Memorial Hill in honor of the 250 celebration. Mm-hmm. Plein air will be starting, sponsored by the Midway Art Association. That's June 20th through July 3rd, with a sale on June 30th through July 4th. Mm-hmm. That's always a fun event of local artists that paint around the Heber Valley, if you have a chance to come over to see that.
Very
and
nice.
Then to kind of the big event is the 4th of July. The Symphony has chosen to come to Midway, and they'll be on the square. There'll be open seating and food trucks. The symphony will start at 8 o'clock, go to 10 o'clock, and as soon as the symphony finishes, the fireworks will go off. So it should be a really fun event honoring America's 250th birthday.
Oh, nice. And I believe that will be free.
All of that's free.
Yeah, that's incredible. For the Arbor Day celebration, Are you looking for volunteers?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Looking for volunteers to help weed and clean up and spruce up our parks and gardens and public ways.
Very nice. Yeah, and you mentioned the Flag Day observances. I know Midway's also working on an America 250 mural. Do you have any idea how that's coming along?
So tiles were due, 900 tiles. People took a tile and painted it in a specific color. The design wasn't specific, but the majority color had to be red, white, or blue. And so tiles were turned in yesterday, and now they'll take the next little bit and put that mural together. It'll be a wavy flag, and that will be on display in front of the community center.
Very nice.
I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, me too. Well, is there anything else going on in Midway that you'd like to share with listeners, Andy?
You know, yoga in the park starts on Saturdays. Farmers markets are starting again. It's just a busy time and an exciting time in Midway right now.
Seems like it. Well, thank you for giving us an overview of what's new in town.
Okay, thanks, Grace.
Thanks so much. We've been speaking with Midway City Council member Andy Garland. On the phone with me is Park City Council member Molly Miller. Molly, good morning.
Good morning, Grace.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I understand there was a Park City Council meeting last night, and it's been a busy week for Park City as well, with an open house earlier this week. I would like to start with some of the tension in the community right now. It seems like frustration is boiling over a little bit, and there was a confrontation that you were confronted at the open house earlier this week, and the police were called over the plans for Bonanza Park redevelopment. And I'm wondering if it's felt to you like tensions have been kind of ramping up over the past several months.
You know, thank you for asking about that. And we have felt a bit of an increase in some frustration. And I think that people care so much in this community, and they really, really want to make sure that they are holding us accountable and making sure that we are making the very best decisions for the future of Park City. So certainly some emotions get high around that. Where it really, I think, has become challenging is when staff is confronted with that, because as you know, staff, they don't create policy, they execute it. And so it really, when we saw staff being really not treated with a basic amount of respect, I think that's where it crossed the line for us. And we really wanted to ensure that we are there for staff, we have their back, and we really want to make sure they feel safe and protected to do their job. And they're just working to improve daily life in Park City like the rest of us. And I just would like to remind folks, like, nothing is as important enough to treat our staff with disrespect. We're all humans, we're neighbors. We should be taking care of each other. Tough conversations can and should be had. The tougher the conversation, the more important to have it. But certainly, please, 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 let's all try to lower the temperature and have discourse that's respectful and dignified.
Yeah, thanks for that message. Yeah, and I know Bonanza Park is one of the issues that's been provoking a lot of frustration, and compensation for elected leaders has been as well. With the amount of backlash, are you or other city leaders rethinking any of those more controversial decisions at all?
Let me tell you, we are listening. Park City, we hear you. We have been having so many conversations about this. I think the one thing we all agree on is we did not do a great job on this rollout. I think we really botched this rollout. I think that we missed a great opportunity to have conversations with people to kind of gauge the vibe on what people were feeling, what was too much, what was not enough. For me, speaking for myself, it's critical for me to make sure we reach a point where many people in the community can serve on council. I think we need to have at least a survivable wage. Yes, this job is part-time, absolutely. It needs to have a part-time wage that allows working people in Park City to be able to contribute to our community. They have such valuable things to add. As a working mom myself, I really can relate to some of the financial pressures that come along with living in a place with such a high cost of living. Of course, we all have to live in 84060 to be able to serve. So I can relate to those sometimes hourly, daily financial pressures. And I think that's a really important perspective to continue to be able to cultivate so that council, either now or in the future, can really make sure that we're thinking about all across the spectrum the ways to make Park City thrive and survive well into the future.
Sounds good. Yeah, thanks for that. And then...
Oh, and just so sorry, Grace, I forgive me for interrupting. I did want to tell you, we are doing a review of those raises. Forgive me. I missed the most. I buried the lead there.
That's okay.
Yes, Mayor Dickey did ask if there was interest in a review on a potential recalibration, and council all agreed that that was a good idea.
Okay, so should residents expect to see that on an agenda coming up maybe later this month?
Yes, June 11th, and there will be public input. We have heard you. Please continue to show up. No matter what anybody says in public input, whether I agree with it or disagree with it, show up. I'm supporting you. I'm sending you good energy. I know that can be a tough thing to do. It doesn't feel comfortable, but please, anybody who wants to show up for public comment, please, please, please come voice your thoughts.
Okay, June 11th, that's your time to weigh in on elected official salaries.
Yes.
Yeah. And then just in terms, to go back to the open house for 1 minute, you mentioned you've got a ton of feedback. What were some of the constructive takeaways from the open house on Monday for you?
You know, something I really liked hearing, I was speaking to a few people, and the engine house came up, and it's pretty much 60% AMI across the board. And so the plan for the mixed use development on the 5 acre is that there's just 106 units planned, but the AMI would be variable. So it would be, if I'm recalling correctly, and I will double check this number, I believe it is as low as 30% of AMI, all the way up to 80% of AMI, and then some near market rate units as well. And that's a really beautiful way to integrate a lot of different families, single people or seniors, across the spectrum of income. And that way it also provides a little bit more security for housing, because if say you get a raise, you're not automatically booted out of your AMI income restricted housing unit. There's a little bit of flexibility to be nimble, and you can count on just a little more security there, because there are so many stipulations and regulations around income. And we wanted to be really thoughtful about making sure that people across the income spectrum would have a little bit more security in housing.
Gotcha. And does it seem like the demand for that is still pretty high?
Yes. Yes, it is incredibly high. We have, you know, our goal, the goal set by the prior council, the 2025 council, was to achieve 15% of the workforce working in Park City. And that is a pretty standard benchmark across towns across the nation. And that is really to ensure that we have enough people living in town to continue to staff workplaces and to make sure services really don't drop below the level where we've become accustomed to having them and enjoying them. And really, that's where people see when the workforce housing drops below 15%, the quality of life for all residents really plummets. And on City Tour, we really saw a big indication of that. The town of Vail officials were telling us that it became so painful when they lost a great swath of their workforce that the community even approved turning some open space into affordable housing, because it was so painful for the residents living there. There was nobody there to serve their coffee, things like that. And that is what we really want to avoid. That's really why we're so committed to creating those affordable and attainable housing opportunities.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear you bring up Vail. I know you guys just got back from the city tour, and it seems like Vail's geography is pretty different, but some of the concerns are the same.
Yes, you're so right. And similar with Breckenridge, too. So we were a thank you to the town of Vail and the town of Breckenridge. They were so welcoming to Park City leadership. It was incredible, absolutely jam-packed. And that was really the whole idea of city tour. That has been the whole idea of city tour, to visit similar ski towns, and we really looked at the differences, and there are so many similarities, and try to just take the best practices and share our information and just really try to lift everybody up together. And I think we got some amazing takeaways from both towns.
Good to hear. I'm glad it was a productive visit.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, let's chat a little bit about last night's council meeting. I know water rates were one big item on the agenda.
Yes. Yes, they were.
So the city manager recommended waiting to raise rates, and did the council agree with him?
Yes. You know, we're so lucky to have Adam, our new city manager. He is just so pragmatic, so thoughtful, has really done the deep, deep digging into this challenge. And I, you know, as a new council member, I'm really learning along with many other folks on this. It is so complex. And we really had a good review of challenges with revenue combined with the skyrocketing inflation costs and what kind of pressure that's going to put on the water department. So what we really wanted to do was make sure before we made any move that would impact our residents' wallets, we didn't want to penalize our residents by increasing their rates if we didn't really, really, really have to do that. So what we agreed to do is pause on water rates for residents and do a water rate study, which is actually recommended every 3 to 5 years. I think it's been way more than that since we last had one, just to make sure that we're going to determine the revenue requirements, including operational needs and capital expenses, and make sure that any cost that comes to customers is really, really fair and that the rates are clear and reflect any updated water policy so that people will know exactly why and how much they're paying. And really, we want to integrate sustainability into that and make sure that we are embodying our sustainability goals as a city.
Mm-hmm. Good to hear. As far as how significant the recommendations were, how much could rates have gone up if the council had gone that way?
You know, that's a really good question, and that's it's really hard to answer because our wonderful Clint has made all of these tables, and it's really variable based on everything from the width of your pipe to the meter to the size of your acreage to it is so variable. And that's really because it is so complex. That's why they really wanted to pause and make sure that everybody had an expert water study to reflect upon and ask a million questions about. I know I'm going to have a million questions to ask about it before we really did do anything that would potentially raise rates.
Okay. And you'll be taking one more vote on this topic next week?
Yes. Yeah, so we will be visiting this on June 11th with a fee schedule. And, of course, we did move forward with enacting impact fees on water rates, which is something when you use impact fees, it's to ensure that development pays for its own growth, not residents. We didn't want residents to bear the cost of development.
So that's something like the cost of hooking up a new apartment to the water system?
Right. Any new development that comes in and will increase water usage for the city, they pay for those impact fees, not the residents.
Okay. Understood.
Yeah.
And then I saw that one more water-related thing on the agenda was some infrastructure replacements in the Deer Valley neighborhood.
Yes.
Do you have any sense of how much of the city's infrastructure is due for that kind of upgrade? That might be outside your wheelhouse.
That's a good question, and I'm looking at, so I believe it was, we have something like, forgive me, it's more than, I think, 200 miles of pipe, and all of the water lines are aging, of course. It's like a 30 to 70 year lifetime for these pipes. So this is one project that will replace those pipes and connections. Obviously, this is significant investment. It's going to be about $1.3 million to replace aging water lines in the Pinnacle subdivision in Lower Deer Valley. And, you know, we're doing this. Residents have been asking for years. We've had multiple water line breaks. But certainly this is going to be an ongoing, probably forever, project as those pipelines reach the end of their lifespan.
Understood. Yeah, thanks. And then just in our last couple of minutes, in other Deer Valley news, farther up the resort, tell me a little bit about the U.S. Open of mountain biking.
I was hoping you would ask about this, Grace. I swear we all had huge grins on our faces the whole time. Deer Valley had a beautiful presentation. Chris Finney had such a thorough staff report. It's a new event. We approved it unanimously. It's a level 4 special event, and it will host, Deer Valley will be the host of the U.S. Open of mountain biking, and it's a 4-day downhill competition scheduled to run September 10th through 13th at Snow Park. And you have to RSVP, but every ticket is free. So we just want to know how many people are going to plan to show up, so we can plan for overflow parking and really get a gauge on what kind of bike valet service levels we need, what kind of bus levels we need. It's going to use the Bald Eagle Mountain Trail system, which is right next to adjacent to the Snow Park Lodge area. And there will be biker pits and lots 1 and 2 and sponsor areas. And there'll be places to stand alongside the trails and watch. We are so excited about this, and this is going to be a little unfamiliar, but it sounds rad.
Great to hear.
I didn't really say the word rad, but I had to like employ some of the mountain biker lingo. We had so many great community members come for public comment. We had probably 100 emails excited about us supporting this event. We're thrilled to support it. We hope it's a smashing success. And so this first year is a pilot, a test event. We hope it is so successful that it comes back every single year. We're so thrilled.
That's great to hear. Well, thank you, Molly. That's all we have time for this morning, but I very much appreciate all the Park City updates.
Grace, thank you so much. Have a great morning.
We've been talking with Park City Councilmember Molly Miller. Summit County has purchased a sliver of vacant land between Highland Drive and Interstate 80. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that's where a developer tried for years to get high-density housing approved.
Summit County announced its purchase of the land on Thursday. The property is where the Highland Flats housing development was proposed 6 years ago. Developers had hoped to build 410 residential units on a semicircular 41-acre area along Highland Drive. They backpedaled after county council members expressed skepticism. 25 acres involved in that proposal were owned by the Catholic Diocese of Salt Lake City. Summit County spent $3.2 million to buy that land, according to county spokesperson Derek Sitaway. Its assessed value was $1.3 million. The county leveraged its 2021 voter-approved open space bond to make the deal. County Lands and Natural Resources Director Jess Kirby says there's still a $16 million balance in that fund. A county news release states the acquisition will remain, quote, largely open. And Summit County Manager Shane Scott called the prospect of housing development extremely unlikely. Possible uses include agriculture, trails, a dog park, or equestrian arena. According to its news release, the county may consider a, quote, carefully planned community-serving facility, but it did not specify what kind. The Colmena Group and Breen Homes, who proposed Highland Flats, still own the eastern portion of the area, despite listing it for sale in late 2023. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone with me are Amy Taylor and Kaya Alvey. They were both involved with the Emergence Art Contest program through the Wasatch Parent Network. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Thank you so much
Good morning, Kay. Thanks for being here.
Amy, I would love to start with you. Could you share a little bit about the kind of work that the Wasatch Parent Network does and how you got involved?
Yeah, so the Wasatch Parent Network started this program, I believe, the 2019 to 2020 school year. So this is the sixth or seventh year running. They just want to create a program that gave artists and students that were keen to artwork to have an opportunity to, you know, compete in a contest and show their artwork through the district. And every year we have a theme. There's about four or five different categories, like drawing, painting, mixed media, photography, and sculpture. And you submit your artwork. We have local artists that judge the contest, and then we have district winners that present to the district board, as well as just overall winners for the school. And then the district has kind of started like an art museum at the district offices, where they display the art year over year and keep it in the district office.
Very nice. And so are you a district parent or an art teacher? What's your role?
Oh, yeah, thank you. So I'm actually a parent, and how I got involved was my daughter wanted to participate the very first year. And I wasn't involved in the program. I didn't know anything about it, but she was actually a district winner. And she was, it was just a really great experience for her. I'm not an artist by any means, but I could see the need for that in the district, and it was just really rewarding for her. And so 2 years down the road, I was speaking with two of the parents that started the program. Angie Neuberger was one of them, and she was just needing help, and that's how I got involved. So this is about my fourth or fifth year being involved in the program.
Wow. Yeah. And it seems like the art contest is open to kids all over the district. You know, there's categories for all ages.
Yeah. So we break them up into K through two, three through five, middle school, and then high school. So yeah, it's all ages. And we even have sometimes in the past, we've had like online students participate that maybe do online through the district, and anybody in the community is welcome to, that's in that age group is welcome to participate.
Yeah, Yeah, and tap into their artistic side. Kaya, have you been participating through many of your years in the district? I know you just wrapped up high school.
Yeah, this is actually the first one I've participated in, so it was a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I think I will do it again, but this was the first time for me.
Very nice. Yeah. Amy, could you tell me about the theme of this year's contest?
Yeah, so this year, we were trying to go along with the 250-year centennial for America, and so it was the America story celebrating 250 years. And it was actually brought to my attention from somebody who does the art galleries at the Wasatch County Library. She's the one that kind of recommended it, and I thought it was a great idea just to kind of participate since the community's kind of involved in this celebration.
Very nice. Yeah. And I understand the winners, they'll be displayed at the library and in the district.
Yeah, so starting in July, there will be a display at the local Wasatch County Library of all the district winners' artwork, after which then it goes over to the district offices and it stays there indefinitely. I mean, we always tell artists they're welcome to take their artwork back if they want to keep it, as long as we can get a copy and just keep it so they can kind of start their art gallery of all the students' artwork.
Very nice. Kaya, I know you were one of the winners from Wasatch High School. Could you, since we're on the radio, people can't see the art you made, but could you describe your piece?
Yeah, absolutely. So the art that I made, it was a decently large piece, and it essentially, the message of it was celebrating all the different diverse groups in the United States. And the main focus was on the LGBTQ+ community. And it had, I included as many like different kinds of people that I could to kind of represent as many different communities as I could. But the main focus was diversity, and I tried to make it colorful to kind of give that, like, you know, this country should be proud of how diverse it is, and the reason it's as developed and as strong as it is because of these people.
Yeah. You titled it, "We Are Powerful Because We Survived." How do you pick that title?
I actually was looking for impactful, like, quotes by queer people. I believe this quote is from Sylvia Rivera. I'm not 100% sure, but it really struck a chord with me just because it's true. Like, we've survived such hardships that it's kind of given us this pride in ourselves and this power to continue on.
Yeah. And Sylvia Rivera, for listeners, is one of the, is a big leader in LGBTQ history and Black LGBTQ history as well. And your piece includes a lot of racial diversity, different, disability representation. Could you tell me about some of the media that you included in the piece?
Yeah, of course. So I used mainly water-based markers, so kind of what I could find around my house, Crayola-esque things, and, you know, Sharpies. I was mostly using colored pencils for, like, the base, and then I added the marker on top to kind of add that color, and a little bit of highlights here and there with white paint markers, but that's around it. It was a pretty simple process, just more time intensive.
Makes sense. Yeah. Is that your, like, preferred medium to work with?
I just work with whatever I find around my house, so typically it does roll over to those types of markers and media, so yeah, typically.
Makes sense. Yeah. Amy, could you tell me about some of the other winners this year? Were there any entries that really stood out to you?
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of great entries. So surprisingly, this year we had a ton of photography entries that through the high school population. So that was actually a really difficult category for the judges to judge. But one that I loved was one of the students. He was lying down at the Delta Arch in Moab, and there was like a moon above, and he was shining a flashlight up to it. And it was like kind of nighttime, and it was just, you know, for a night photo to turn out as well as it did, it was just like a really beautiful piece, and I really loved that one.
Oh, how cool. And I do want to mention for any listeners, while you're waiting, if you can't make it down to Wasatch County in person to see the pieces, the district did post images of a lot of the winners on its Facebook page. So people can head online and check out what we're talking about here on air.
And the other thing is Heber Valley Life magazine, they always publish the winning art pieces every year, typically in their summer magazine.
Cool. So lots of good ways to check out the winning artwork. Kaya, I know you're interested in kind of pursuing a career in illustration. What type of illustration are you interested in doing?
I'm hopeful to do some kind of like promotional illustration. So advertisements for animated series or books, along with I'd love to do some kind of freelance or illustration for graphic novels. I think that would kind of be my niche.
Very nice. Yeah. And I guess kind of zooming out from this particular contest and just to get involved in the arts more generally, I'd love to hear from each of you, like, what would you say to other, I guess for you, Kaya, other students, or for you, Amy, other parents, to say, like, the arts are important, like, why do they matter to you? Why should people get involved? And Amy, let's start with you.
Oh, okay. Well, like I said, I'm not an artist by any means. I just love the program because of the opportunity it gave my daughter. But as I've judged it year over year, these pieces are super impactful. And it's I think it's really special that I get to see everybody's artwork as it comes through. And there's a lot of talent in our valley among the students. And, you know, year over year, the participation has gone up. But I think it's really special that these students are willing to share this gift because it's really impactful and it really does send a message. Yeah.
Kai, what about you? Why do you think getting involved in the arts is important?
Well, it's like Amy said, the arts are powerful. Like, you can make such a huge impact with creating something of your own volition and being able to share emotions or messages that you feel are important through art. And of course, there's many ways to do that. There's many different mediums. But I think the arts are also quite accessible for a lot of people, like no matter what age you are, there are a lot of ages that were a part of the contest. And so having that freedom to be able to express yourself in such a way that's available to virtually everyone is really, really such an important thing, I feel.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. That's just about all we have time for, but is there anything either of you would like to add before I let you go?
I'm just really grateful for the program, and we have a lot of great sponsors. The WPN, the CAPS program has helped us a lot, and Heber Valley Life magazine, the Wasatch Community Network, I'm sure I'm leaving others out, Wasatch Art Foundation. So I just really appreciate the support that the community's given to the program.
Sounds good. Anything else from you, Kaya?
No, the program was incredible, and I really appreciate being invited on here. This has been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me. We've been speaking with Amy Taylor and Kaya Alvey. They are involved with this year's Emergence Art Contest program in Wasatch County. The Lower Silver Spur Trail near the first-time parking lot at Park City Mountain is closed until the end of July for half-pipe construction. Mountain Trails Foundation Director Laura Anthony says hikers and bikers on Armstrong must take a detour.
So the detour for that is to take Three Kings over to the bottom of either Spiro or to Armstrong, so you can kind of access the detour on the paved street.
The construction is part of preparations for Olympic snowboarder Sean White's newest competition series, the Snow League, near the Three Kings and Eagle chairlifts. The first Utah edition of the competition lands in Park City in January. The trail is expected to be closed through July 31st.